Now, the Buckeye Extra Podcast with Rob Aller, Bill Rabinowitz, and Joey Kaufman from the Columbus Dispatch.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is brought to you by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Hello, Ohio State fans. This is Joey Kaufman from the Columbus Dispatch. I'm joined by Bill Rabinowitz. And it's April 8th, a rainy afternoon in Columbus, Ohio. And we are entering the stretch run of spring football practice. Bill, I think the most interesting thing we've learned about the Buckeyes in the last week, and we got to watch a couple practices. But first, let's maybe discuss the offensive line. I always feel it's one of the more enjoyable interview sessions of spring. Greg Studrawa as one of the...
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, well, he always has a hoarse voice. It always feels like football season is here, and we talked to a couple offensive linemen. Parts up front for the Buckeyes this spring.
Yeah, I always like talking to Stud. I mean, everyone calls, you know, you have a name like Studrawa. That's, you don't have a choice but to be known as anything but Stud. So he's a good guy, and, you know, he kind of looks like, if you were like draw up a, I get a offensive line coach from Central Casting, he'd look like Greg Studrawa. See? He looked like Stud. You know, big guy, hoarse voice, you know, from yelling probably for, you know, 30 years. I can tell you, though, I mean, he's excited about what he's got. There's some uncertainty on the line. The only thing we know for sure is that, assuming they stay healthy, Thayer Munford and Nicholas Petitfrere will be the tackles. Thayer Munford, a left tackle, where he's played since the 60s, and Nicholas Petitfrere back at right tackle. They played great last year. They were probably among the most underrated players on that team. And then the middle of the line is a question mark, but it's not a question mark where you go, oh, no. It's a question mark just, okay, who are the guys who are going to just win those jobs? I feel that it's close to being certain that Paris Johnson is going to be one of them, probably at right guard. And I think it's almost certain that Harry Miller, who played left guard last year, will play either left guard or center. He's a natural center. And I think Matt Jones is the most likely fifth starter. Again, either left guard or center. Harry Miller's out this spring because he's not doing team stuff this spring, but he's doing individual stuff. He's rehabbing from an injury. So Matt Jones, along with Luke Whippler, have been taking the first team snaps at center. So, you know, I think they could. I'm not sure who's going to play center and who's going to play guard. And there are other contenders. I don't think it's as much of a mystery as some people are portraying it. I think those are the five guys. I think Matt Jones is maybe the most tenuous of the group in terms of holding a job, but I think he's in the lead right now.
It seems like most of the intrigue, at least from reporters and in a lot of the media session, has been focused on Paris Johnson. Obviously, he came in with great acclaim, former five-star recruit from Cincinnati, and Josh Myers talked about Paris Johnson late last season glowingly, talked about how he could win the Outland Award and really had a lot of nice things to say about his teammate. And normally, had it not been for this pandemic, Thayer Munford would have left for the NFL, but because of players being afforded that extra year of eligibility, he's come back and is still at left tackle. So Paris Johnson really isn't quite able to slide over to tackle like I think he foresaw himself when he was recruited out of high school. Because he said he looked at the depth chart and started doing the counting, and he thought by a sophomore year he would be a starter at tackle. That's not the case. He's going to be at guard. I don't think there's really any controversy at all about that, or really sort of, I don't think they really gave much second thought to moving Thayer Munford or Nick Petitfrere from the tackle spots, because you're right, Bill, they were so good last year and really unsung heroes of the team in a lot of ways. And just, they're also two of the best pass blockers in the nation, but it does, I guess, create a little bit of intrigue.
Yeah. I'm writing about Paris Campbell. Oh my God. Paris Johnson in tomorrow's Dispatch, and what about the offensive line in general in today's paper. Paris Johnson is a guy that has gotten raves from the moment he stepped on campus. He was, I think, the number 7 overall recruit in the entire country last year. He thought he could be maybe like Orlando Pace and be the first true freshman to start at Ohio State. And honestly, if you didn't have Munford and Petit Frere, and Petit Frere was in the same category as he was as a recruit, he might have. I mean, he could have played last year, I think. But, you know, he didn't. He played, he filled in at times for Wyatt Davis when Wyatt Davis's knee would act up, and played well. It's just always been a matter of time before Paris Johnson stepped in to a key role. The question is what role, because, you know, not only is he a football player, but he's also a budding journalist. And so he's written for The Lantern, the Ohio State student newspaper. And I've read a couple of his stories. I have to tell you, he's pretty good. You know, I wonder if he's coming for our jobs. Hopefully he aspires higher than that. But he's a smart guy. He was in National Honor Society as a high school student. You know, I've talked to his mom a couple of times. She's an impressive person. And so, you know, I think it's pretty safe to say that he's kind of a star in the making. But the thing that's interesting about this group is that there really truly is depth at on the line for the first time. Well, not the first time. It's been there for maybe a year or two, but I think this is the most depth they've had. I mean, during Urban Meyer's time, he kind of lived in fear constantly that one of his linemen would get hurt, and they were ridiculously durable because they did not have depth for most of his tenure. And it's been a priority to get that depth. And you know, we hadn't heard much about guys like Josh Fryer, you know, and Stud talked yesterday at length about how impressed he was with Josh Fryer. You know, there are other guys. Whippler is certainly a guy next year you would expect to be probably the center. You know, they got a bunch of guys that could step in. Juwan Jones, Enoch Famahi. I'm not even sure that Famahi's name was even mentioned yesterday, and yet, you know, he's certainly a viable option there.
Yeah, I mean, you're naming a lot of guys who are really in the mix, and some of these guys weren't just big time recruits. I mean, Juwan Jones was a three star. Right. It really has been a priority for them in recruiting to not only add guys who are like Paris Johnson, who are those high end recruits, but to supplement that with depth. And I think it's one of their stronger positions on offense, certainly. I mean, really, there's a lot of depth across the board. You could look at the whole offense, really, running back, receiver, offensive line. I think they maybe have more holes on the defensive side of the ball in terms of their depth at linebacker and safety. We can get into that a little bit later on. But certainly on the offensive side of the ball, I don't think it's a question really at any spot. And Bill, I know we were both at practice earlier this week. I was there Monday. You were there Monday. You were there last Friday as well. It was the first time we had been on the practice field at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center since COVID started, since the onset of the pandemic last March. And so we got to lay eyes on Ohio State football players for the first time in 13 months. And we'll give you our thoughts on what we saw. We're just going to take a quick break and be right back with you. You have to stand behind a statement like the best buying experience in the business. At Rosati Windows, their commitment to the customer has not changed since day one. Mike Rosati realizes that people have options when choosing replacement windows, which is why he appreciates each and every one of their customers. At Rosati Windows, they pride themselves on the very high standards of business ethics and customer satisfaction. They are accredited with an A+ rating with the Better Business Bureau, a top business with customer choice, and voted by Central Ohio as the best business in the window community with the Columbus Dispatch. That list goes on and on, but it's important to point out their customers voted for Rosati Windows for these awards, and it's why they make a statement like, Rosati Windows is the best buying experience in the business. We're back. Thanks for listening in, as always. Bill, it was nice to be back and watch a football practice. Again, I came back from the facility, and I had the rubber from Field Turf in my shoes again. Yeah. I needed some lumbar support after standing for a little bit. It was nice. Those are kind of the telltale signs of, I feel like, watching a football practice.
You know, what struck me after not having been there in a year was the smell of the place. And when I walked in, it was like, oh, yeah, it smells like the Woody. And, you know, you can't describe a smell. It's kind of hard to describe it.
Yeah, you can. Smells like
I don't know how. I don't know how you smell, but there was, you know, the pellets, the little rubber, whatever you want to call it, you know, that there is a distinctive smell. It's not a bad one. It's not a good one. It's just kind of distinctive. That was the first thing that kind of hit me. And then, you know, most of the time, honestly, we're watching these guys stretch. I mean, it's not real exciting. You're watching them go through punting drills. I mean, it's highly overrated. It'd be nice if they showed, you know, 11 on 11 drills. They're not going to do that in front of us. We did get to see the quarterbacks throw. And again, they're not getting, there's no pass rush. There's no, you know, it's not the same. But all three of those guys have good arms. They can make all the throws from what we could see. They seem to be mostly accurate for what it's worth. And I asked Ryan Day this because CJ Stroud, both days I was there, was the first one taking reps. Does it mean anything? I don't know. You know, if it was one day, and I'd say probably not. But both days I was there, he was first, followed by Jack Miller and then Tom Accord. Day says there is no pecking order. Okay. I mean, no reason not to believe him. But it didn't do anything to kind of change the perception that CJ Stroud has is a neck ahead in the race. We'll find out when we find out. But it sounds like right now, I mean, I don't think that Ryan Day, any of the Zoom calls he's had with reporters, has mentioned any of the three by name. He's just going about the quarterbacks, they, you know, he's praised them. He's not disappointed with them, but he has not singled out any of them, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, he's lumped them all together. He just refers to them as the quarterback. Group. He doesn't really get into the particulars between CJ or Jack or Kyle McCord. It would have been, I guess, amusing if you were the Ohio State football coach, knowing reporters were going to be at practice to stage your quarterback drills in a way where maybe you have the walk-ons go first. Really, really throw everybody for a loop. You would have you would have really forced us to report some strange things that would have been read by coaches at other Big Ten schools to try and figure out who's going to be the starter by maybe Jagalurow goes first and quarterback. Yeah. That would have really, yeah, I think, thrown people for a loop. But yeah, I mean, I don't know why you would. I guess you can kind of read into that if you will. But they all do look impressive. If you just, I think this really is an opportunity for us. We really haven't seen any of these guys in person much. They didn't play really in the games or throw a pass in the game. So it's your chance to stand on the sidelines and see them up close and see how the ball comes out. I do think they all look the part if you just watch them go through a throwing session. One of the things I always enjoy in when you cover a game in the pre-pandemic times is maybe you want a sideline before the game. And I remember watching Gunnar Hoke and Chris Chuganoff, the guys they had behind Fields. And I think the arm talent is a noticeable upgrade with these three guys. But, I mean, we're not really watching a whole lot at the end of the day because it's all routes on air. It's nothing really. I guess that's going to stretch the quarterbacks all that much.
Hey, we've not talked to them. We've had a series of interviews this spring. I've talked to most position units. I don't think we talked to we get defensive line tomorrow. We just had offensive line. We've not talked to the quarterbacks. We've not talked to the wide receivers, correct? Is that correct. It?
Wide receivers and quarterbacks are the ones we have not spoken with, which presumably we'll hear from next week.
Well, yeah. I'm more confident we'll hear from the receivers than I am the quarterbacks. I think Ryan Day would like to not have any of them say anything until, you know, one of them's a starter. But we'll, you know, I would imagine we'll talk to them next week.
I would think so too.
Maybe it'll be after the spring game. That's a possibility, but we'll see. The spring game, by the way, which is April 17th, next Saturday at noon. They announced today that there's going to be limited capacity to be just under 20,000, 19,180 is the exact number, of which about half are going to go to first responders, people from the Wexner Medical Center, other people who've been in the front lines of the pandemic, a limited number, like 2,500 to students, about 5,000 or so to general public and season ticket holders. So though there will be fans there. So, you know, which I think is nice. I mean, I think that that after playing last year in the shoe without anybody, and it felt weird. It was just weird last year being there, and you felt like you were watching like a lab experiment or something. It just didn't seem like a game. It was just weird. So even to have the stadium 1/5 full will be nice. And it'll be good for the players. It'll be good for just for the atmosphere. It'll be good for the fans and those first responders to it's been tough for them. I mean, thank you to all of you. If you're a first responder, seriously, thank you. And I hope this will give you a measure of, a diversion for a couple hours. And, I'm glad that they're having a spring game. I'm glad they're going to have some fans there. Obviously, you have to be masked, social distance, all that stuff. But it does look, Joey, like this season is going to be a pretty normal season. Now that the vaccines are really, the quantity of vaccinations is steadily increased. We've gotten one dose. We're getting our second one next week. We're happy about that, although I'm not sure how we're going to feel right afterward, but that's the price you pay. It looks like it's going to be a normal season, or at least a much more normal season than last year. And that's good.
Yeah. In its news release, Ohio State said it was using the spring game as a little bit of a trial run for their health and safety protocols for the fall. And they're going to have the fans there. The band's going to be there.
Right. And great for the band, because the band wasn't there last year. I mean, I probably of anybody at the stadium, I may be happiest for the band.
I think this matters a little bit for, and we can, I don't know, think about it more, but we just got the release a little bit ago. I do think it matters a little bit for these quarterbacks and for some of these younger players on the roster, because you have a significant portion of the team which is not played in front of fans at a college stadium, and there's going to be pressure that comes along with that. And I think you maybe get butterflies a little differently, and you get a little different adrenaline boost in a way. And so I think if you are a coaching staff that you want to have players develop and you want to see who can kind of rise as a little bit as the cream of the crop, I mean, that's an opportunity you can take advantage of. I know 20,000 isn't what Ohio State normally has for a spring game. Normally they might have 60,000-70,000 people. In 2019, the year I was first here, that was the last spring game in 2019, they had 60,000 fans. I know they've had more in the past, but
they had 100 one year. I think it was, yeah, like, I think that, they had 100.
Those were some years where they were trying to break the attendance record, though.
Right.
Yeah, so they don't always get that many, but
no.
But 20,000 is a good number, and that's what a lot of schools get across the country. So they'll be able to use that to their advantage and everything. I don't want to focus entirely on the quarterbacks from what we learned at practice. Bill, did you have any other observations? It is an opportunity for us to see some of these players up close, and that sounds like a very obvious thing, but it was interesting to see, say, Marvin Harrison Jr., for example. He's listed at 6'4 in the roster, but when you see him up close and in person, he looks like legit 6'4. So it's always a little interesting to kind of contrast what you see versus what's just listed on a roster.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I thought, for what it's worth, Kyle McCord looked a little smaller than I thought he would be. Probably not. I mean, he's not looking smaller or anything, but I thought he looked a little smaller than Jack Miller, it's not like he's, Tate Martell, don't get me wrong. And they're listed as almost the same exact size. Jack Miller is 5 pounds heavier. Sigmo's 6'3". I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Football heights are a little bit like basketball heights, where if somebody in basketball is listed as 6'9", it's a pretty good bet that he's 6'7". They all looked the part. I thought a couple of interesting position switches were DeMario McCall switching to defense after not for his whole career, not finding his niche as either a running back or a receiver. And the other one that's maybe even more intriguing is G. Scott moving from receiver to tight end. You mentioned that Ohio State has depth everywhere on offense. I would say the one place that it's shaky, or at least unproven, is tight end. Obviously, you have Jeremy Rucker, who's an All-American candidate. Behind him, you don't know. Luke Farrell and Jake Hausman are gone. And you have Cade Stover. I have guys, but G. Scott could really be one of those kind of flex tight ends, You know, he's not a speedy guy for a receiver because he's a big guy. But as a tight end, you can kind of imagine, you know, if his blocking is adequate and that Kevin Wilson will make sure his blocking does become adequate over time. But again, it's not like Ohio State's receivers don't block anyway. That's a big part of their run game is receivers blocking on the perimeter. So it's not like, you know, they will have to introduce G. Scott to the concept of blocking. But it is obviously a different deal as a tight end. But if he can do that and they can use him in a role that's a real weapon potentially.
Yeah, they've talked a little bit about that spring, and we've talked about it on this podcast as well, just looking for a number two tight end, because outside of Jeremy Ruckert, it's really thin. Cade Stover is an option. Well, he just transferred, or he didn't transfer, but he switched sides of the ball from defense to offense last spring, so it's a new position for him. Joe Royer is a really young guy, and so maybe G. Scott does give him a little bit of an option. But at the end of the day, I don't know how important or essential depth is at tight end. If say they look and they look and they develop and they develop and they never find a presentable number two option at tight end, well, you just use one tight end. You have a third receiver on the field, and they have plenty of depth of wide receiver. So I don't know if it changes things. They do like to run 12 personnel and have two tight ends out there. And Ryan Day and Kevin Wilson have showed that look the last couple seasons, but they can't do that as much as they want. I think they'll be just fine. One other position switch, and it's not entirely a position switch, but it is movement a little bit on the defensive side of the ball, and with Craig Young, who's a linebacker, but we watched him play safety a little bit. And when Ohio State was doing some 7-on-7 stuff in practice Monday, they had Craig Young with the safeties, and they were using two linebackers. And when Ryan Day was first hired in 2019, and Greg Madison and Jeff Hafley were there, they talked about the bullet position, which was going to be that hybrid linebacker safety, and maybe it'll come to fruition a little bit with Craig Young, but that's a snippet of one practice in early April. So it remains.
Yeah, right. And, you know, they've had some injuries too. Dallas Gann is out. Greg Stadrawa said that Juan Jones is out right now. Who's the other one? Somebody else that's been here a little bit of time. But, this is a deep team. You know, there's still a lot of unproven players, but when you go, is there a position on this team that you go, do they have enough depth? No, I wouldn't. I mean, maybe the secondary, just because it's all unproven behind the guys that you know about. Well, the other injuries obviously are Seven Banks is out and Cam Brown and Court Williams are still rehabbing. So, you know, they're a little thin that way, but you know, they got a bunch of guys in the secondary that I think they feel good about, but there's like, look, it's Ohio State. I mean, every team in the Big Ten would love to have their roster. They'd love to have their backups, honestly. I mean, think about a guy like Paris Johnson. He was started for almost every team in the league last year as a freshman. And so Ohio State is still loaded. Obviously, the quarterback's a huge question. They have to get that resolved eventually. This is a transitional year a little bit in the sense that you don't have an obvious Heisman Trophy candidate at quarterback. So if you're a Big Ten rival, you think this might be the year you try to catch Ohio State, get them. But, you know, anyone who thinks Ohio State's not the favorite in the Big Ten is delusional.
No, and I think about this too a little bit, just compared to last year, because it was such a different type of season, and it was a late October start, and this year is going to be a normal season. So even if you are transitioning in 2021, you're going to have a 12-game regular season. You're presumably going to have a Big Ten title game. You're going to have a semifinal game. So if Ohio State wants to work itself back into a situation where it was last year playing in the national title game, whoever you pick at quarterback, presumably that'll be the 15th start in their career. You're going to have a long runway to build up to a monumental playoff game. They do come out of the gate with Minnesota and Oregon, which doesn't exactly
create right
the friendliest runway for a takeoff, but I do think it's a lot. It's not a full on sprint as it was last year, where you had five or six games, and then you're jumping right into the playoff against Clemson. So I think that is also something to keep in mind with this season. It's you don't have to be a finished product in September. You have a chance to grow and be a little bit of a late start. Bill, any other practice observations, or should we dive into the one mailbag question we want to tackle this week?
No, I don't think there was anything else that jumped out at me at practice. I thought the running backs looked good. You know, when they're not getting tackled, you better look good if you're running back. I really wanted to kind of look a little extra hard at Travion Henderson, five-star running back, and you know, he looked good. But until you see guys, to me, the biggest thing about a running back is his vision. You know, how does he see? How does he read cuts? How does he read the defense? Read his blockers? You can't tell that in these things. You just can't tell. So you know, a bunch of guys looked the part, but beyond that, I'm not going to make any judgments.
Mayan Williams did go first in their running back drills.
That's because, well, Master Teague was out there, then he wasn't out there. Now, a lot of times veteran guys kind of get breaks from practicing. I mean, that's just, you know, what does Thayer Munford need an extra rep for, honestly? You know, let those young guys do it. Master Teague is, what does he have to prove by going through some rep in March? You know, so let the young guys go through it.
I should share, I guess, the highlight play that we saw on Monday was a one-footed catch by Jeremy Ruckert in the corner of the end zone a little bit, which he had
that was a one-footed?
Yeah, 1 foot. Got 1 foot in.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant he caught it with his foot. I'm like, what are you talking about?
No, I guess a toe tap catch would be the
okay, there we go.
The better.
Well, that's Jeremy Ruckert. I mean, Jeremy Ruckert's a great receiver. I mean, he and Garrett Wilson made a catch in Justin Fields' workout during Pro Day. And apparently Justin Fields is going to work out again next week, by the way. Garrett Wilson makes the extraordinary look routine. It's his body control and range is just kind of unnatural. I mean, I don't know how he gets his body to contort so effortlessly the way he does. And his hands are so good. He's, you know, between him and Olave, and Olave's been out, he's, I guess, got some kind of non-COVID sickness, you know, like a flu or something. I don't know what it is, but nothing serious, I don't think. So he's not been out there the days that we've been watching. And Olave's just so smooth. You know, can he make a circus catch? Sure. But that's, you know, he's just such a smooth guy. Garrett Wilson just makes these catches that are just like, how do you do that? But he makes it look like routine. It's just kind of amazing.
Like, how do you contort your body when you play hockey?
Very, very, very badly.
Kind of like Gary Wilson?
Probably because Gary Wilson does play hockey. So I would assume that I might be slightly better than Gary, probably slightly better than Gary Wilson on skates. But I'm not sure I'd, you know, give him a week. I'm not sure I'd say that. Age is not good. Aging is not good when you're trying to play against 20-year-olds.
But you're out there. That's what matters.
Barely. But we did finish in first place, Vandalay Industries, in our regular season. You got the playoffs coming up in a couple weeks. I know Buckeye Nation is pretty excited about that.
Oh, yeah.
As are you. All right, let's go to the mailbag question. You got a question. Thank you. Who's the question from? Do you want to give a little props to the question?
Yeah, questions from Carl Johnson, who emailed it in, which is another method. You can always send in your question to BuckeyeExtraFootball at Gmail. It's a good way to submit your questions. You can pontificate a little longer rather than a tweet, which is what Carl Johnson has done for us. And also he signed the email. It's Crazy Buckeye, Pennsylvania. So,
all right. What does he want to know? What does Carl want to know?
I'll read it in full. He says, my question is on your thoughts for Chris Olave's ceiling this season. Is he primed to have a season as colorful and impactful as Devontae Smith, barring no injuries? I'm not saying win the Heisman, but be that type of impact player. Smith had a new QB and Mac Jones at Alabama and flourished, albeit with a scheme that allowed Sarkisian to show Smith's athleticism and creativity. Olave and the rest of the receiving and tight end corps will have a new QB too. I hope to see days creativity to showcase and highlight Chris's and other talents. Might we see a Devontae Smith-esque season from CO2?
Well, I think he meant core and not corpse. At least I
hope. Corpse. C-O-R-P-S.
It's core. It's pronounced core, Joseph.
I just know how to spell it.
So much to teach the boy.
I'm not an audio journalist by trade. We are.
We're quite aware of that now. The short answer, I would say, is unlikely. It's not a. That's not a criticism of Chris Olave. He's a great receiver. I think it speaks to just what a unique season and unique talent Devontae Smith was and was part of last year with that group. And also, I think, Mac Jones was a first-year quarterback as a starter. I think they're going to be a little more cautious with whoever is the starting quarterback, at least at the beginning of the year. They're going to probably rely on the run game a little bit more early. And you also have, like I said, Garrett Wilson there too. So I'm not sure that Chris Olave is going to dominate catches the way that Devontae Smith did. Because remember, Jalen Waddle was out for most of the year. So I'm expecting a great year from Chris Olave to think that he's going to be a legitimate Heisman candidate. That's probably a stretch. Your thoughts?
My thoughts mostly align with yours. And
are you proud of that?
I don't know if I'm proud of it. I haven't really considered whether I should be proud or not proud. Just being fact of the matter and answering questions honestly. But I think a big reason why Devontae Smith had the season he had was, as you mentioned, Jalen Waddle got hurt in late October against Tennessee on that kickoff return and didn't play in November and December. And Alabama moved Devontae Smith around and was really creative with him because they didn't have their other big play receiver. And if there was a situation where Ohio State didn't have Garrett Wilson, I'm sure they would probably try to use Chris Olave in more creative ways and move him around, because presumably you're going to have Chris Olave outside and Garrett Wilson the slot, Jeremy Ruckert at tight end. I don't know if they're in a position where they're going to have to do that as much. Maybe there was injury to Garrett Wilson. All of a sudden they would need to increase the volume toward Chris Olave. That's maybe a situation where you could see him having just the volume that was directed toward Devontae Smith. And so I think that's where I think it's a tough hill to climb for him just because of the options that are going to be at Kyle McCord or CJ Stroud or Jack Miller's disposal next year.
Yeah, and remember, Devontae Smith's the first receiver to win it in God knows how long, right? I mean,
he did preface it by saying he doesn't mean win the Heisman, but be that type of impact player.
Okay. Okay. I think it all depends on how much they throw to him. I mean, I think the sky's the limit in terms of his statistics based on how much they throw to him. You also figure the defenses are going to key on him and Garrett Wilson and not let him do that. And then, you deal with the Big Ten weather as the season gets deeper. And, depending on where you're playing and when you're playing and the weather, you could have a game where he catches two balls because you can't throw it that game. And so, but again, he and Garrett Wilson, I would say, are the best receiving duo in the country. I don't think I'm going out on a limb. I think you could say the same thing about Nicholas Petit-Frere and Thayer Munford. I think the Ohio State is the best pair of tackles in the country. The question is, it's going to come down to the quarterback. It's going to come down to the defense. And, there are a lot of questions that need to be answered. But I don't think Chris Olave is one of them.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, too, I think Devontae Smith's season was so special. I mean, I'm just kind of looking at his stats again for last year. I mean, he had 117 catches.
Yeah, no Ohio State receivers done that.
Chris Olave never had more than 50 in a season. And obviously last year was shortened and all that. But, I mean, has Ohio State ever had a guy who's now trying to
look
at some records?
I think about the
reception record is for a season.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I think KJ Hill had a bunch one year, but again, he was in a six-man rotation. I mean, I remember Michael Thomas, who's arguably the best receiver in the NFL, had 40 catches his last year. I mean, That's what Ohio State is. I mean, it's they're not going to throw 120 times to a guy. But I still think, you know, all right, we've exhausted that. I do want, before we go, to note the passing of one of the great players from the 1968 team. That's kind of the 68 team. And, well, I'd say I don't want to rank them because it's hard to rank them. But the 68 team is one of the great ones in Ohio State history. The Super Softs, and not much was expected of them. You know, they knew they had this great recruiting class. Freshmen, of course, couldn't play back then. And they emerged as sophomores, and they went undefeated. They beat the O.J. Simpson-led USC team in the Rose Bowl, won the national championship. Mike Sensabaugh, who was a star safety on that team, still holds the Ohio State career interceptions record of 22 and the single season with 9. He died last week, age 72. He and Jack Tatum, talking about duos, Sensabaugh and Tatum were as good as it gets. Tatum was a legendary, he knocked you in the next week. And Sensabaugh was kind of more the center fielder. I talked to Rex Kerr. It's always great to talk to Rex Kerr, the quarterback from that team. And he said Sensabaugh was like Willie Mays in center field as a safety. And, they're in their early 70s now, those guys. And this is kind of what happens, that they start to go. And Jack Tatum's gone. And there are a bunch of others from that team that are no longer here. And, you know, I got a couple emails from people who remember Mike Sensabaugh. He's a little bit before my time. I kind of knew of him, but I don't remember playing when I was old enough to know it. But I knew how good he was. And he played for 8 years in the NFL. I think he was an 8th-round pick and lasted 8 years in the NFL, which is pretty impressive. Rex Kern told funny stories about how he'd hide his clothes in the locker room. His defensive players finished practice before offensive players. And so Sensabaugh would go and Kern's locker and hide his clothes. And sometimes Kern would have to go home wearing missing articles of clothing. And so it's always nice talking to those guys, and you want to appreciate them while they're still here. And again, that 68 team is one of those legendary teams in Ohio State history. So condolences to Mike Sensabaugh's family.
Yeah, it's unfortunate in a way. I guess another side effect of COVID last year is that super sophomore class who were seniors in 1970, they would have had some 50th anniversary recognition and honorees during a typical game. You think about all those times after the first quarter or whatnot where they have some of the guys in the field and you run a highlight clip on the video board and they get a big wave from the crowd. I mean, they were honored in some previous years in 68, but I mean, it was sort of, I guess, going to be a little bit of a last hurrah for some of those guys who were seniors in 70 to get a 50th anniversary celebration.
Yeah, because the previous national championship team, the one that kind of consensus one, was 54, and those guys are now in their 80s, upper 80s, and so I'm not sure how many of them are still around. And you know, it's the 68 team, that was the team that saved Woody Hayes for another decade. I mean, he was, I don't say thin ice, but it was thinning ice at Ohio State, and he brings these guys in and changed the way he coached. He was more flexible than he had been. He let some of these guys play defense. It was a different game, very different game back then. But he was, a lot of people were predicting Woody Hayes was not going to last much longer, and then that team guaranteed that he would stick around for quite a bit longer. Another 10 years, as it turned out.
Yeah, well, it's I'm glad you brought that up and give a little tribute to Mike Sensabaugh at the end of this podcast. And Bill and I will be back next week. Maybe Rob will join us as well as we preview the spring football game and finish up with the final week of spring practices. If you have a question that you're wondering about the Buckeyes, feel free to submit that to buckeyeextra@gmail.com, and we will answer it in full on a future show like we just did with Carl Johnson. If you like this podcast, give us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. I don't know if you can give a review on Spotify, but on Apple you can. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we will talk to you next week. Have a great weekend.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is made possible by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra Podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.